This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Ooh, 3 minutes after 12 is the time. One of those very, very rare occasions where I find my attention drawn towards the political sphere, even as we prepare for the excitement of Mystery Hour. But given that that vote isn't until 5 o'clock today, we will continue with the scheduled programme, as they say, as the grown-ups say. This is, of course, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. You will ring in, or you will hear other people ring in with a variety of questions covering an incredible array of areas and topics, and then you will hear other people ring in. It may possibly be you yourself ringing in to answer them. It really is pretty much as simple as that. There are certain criteria for inclusion, largely dullness and repetition, although repetition is a movable feast given how long we've been doing this and how poor my memory is. Repetition... I was about to try and do a joke about repeating dullness there, but I blew it. Anyway, the number you need is 0345 60 60973 is the number that you need. There is a prize for my favourite contribution. The prize is a pristine copy of the Mystery Hour board game, available now in John Lewis as well as online via mysteryhour.co.uk. I still have a little frisson of disbelief when I say that out loud. A Mystery Hour book. I mean, no one listened to this programme when we started doing Mystery Hour, let alone enough people to merit the idea of actually having a highly successful board game launched off the back of it. But we really do. You can buy it in shops. You buy it on Amazon. You can buy it from mysteryhour.co.uk, and you can buy it. And it's brilliant. I haven't had one duff response. Quite magnificent to think of the fun that was had across the nation as a consequence of Mystery Hour being turned into a board game. By some geniuses. Nothing to do with me. I just got my face on the box. And anyway, my favourite contribution this week will win a pristine a box of Mystery Hour board game. And my decision is final, although the full terms and conditions can be found at lbc.co.uk. I think that's pretty much it. You will get a Ray Liotta. We tend to play out more Ray Liottas during Mystery Hour than any other part of the week. If your qualifications for contributing are beyond belief, I mean, if you are so on the money with your qualifications that we are all slightly agog with amazement and admiration, then you'll get a Ray Liotta. But again, it's entirely in my gift, and no complaints are allowed. We've done that one, Johnny in Basildon. We've done that quite recently, so we won't take that call first. We'll go instead to Andy, who is in Morden. Andy, question or answer?
I have got a question for you, James.
Carry on.
When it rains, yes, is it inevitable that those raindrops fall to earth, or on occasions, can they get blown back up into the clouds or evaporate before they reach the earth, or what?
So once a raindrop has formed and started falling,
yep,
are there any circumstances in which it won't reach earth?
Yes.
Won't reach the earth?
Succinct and to the point.
Yeah. And what makes you wonder that?
Well, I saw a rain cloud the other day, and you could see where the rain was dropping out of it, and then it sort of disappeared. And I don't know if it was being blown and scattered by a lower level wind, or whether it only reached that level in the.
It couldn't be blown back up, could it? Because it would. I mean, as long as it's still water, then when the opportunity presents itself, it's going to fall back down again. But it could possibly hit so much heat that it evaporates back up.
But if it was being blown around by a wind and it was scattered, the raindrop was actually scattered, would that make it small enough for it to go back up on an up current?
Yeah, I quite like that question. I was in the car wash the other day, and it's one of the rare areas in which you regularly see water going uphill, isn't it? When you get the blower on the windscreen and it starts going, I'm always slightly hypnotised by that. No one else is. I thought my daughter would be like, I said, look, darling, there's some water going uphill. You don't see that very often. And she gave me that look that teenage girls give their dads when they reach a level of dullness.
Dad.
Yeah, all right, Dad. All right, well done. Yeah, you carry on looking at your little water drops, Dad. I've got some Taylor Swift to listen to. Thank you. I like that question. Can raindrops... raindrops, do they keep falling on your head? Or can they, in fact, make their way back up into the sky? That's the second verse of the song. Suggests. 1208, David's in Birmingham. David, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
So a bit of a weird one.
They're my favourite.
Well, yes. So taking my four-year-old to the toilet in the middle of the night. Notice he's half asleep.
Yeah.
He's itching all over his body, and he does it every single time.
Right.
And I kind of turned to my wife and I said, why is this, you know, this is weird, he's itching everywhere. She was like, well, I do that when I'm tired too, or when I've woken up. And then I thought about it, and I was like, yes, I also like falling asleep. I'll be itching, my skin gets itchy when I'm tired or if I've woken up. So I'm just thinking either something very weird is going on in our kind of genetic pool.
Right. You mean it's unique to your family?
Well, hopefully not. My question is basically, why do we get itchy when we're tired or half asleep?
Does it happen when you're active but tired, or does it only happen when you're half asleep already? Through tiredness.
Half asleep already or falling asleep.
It might be circulation. I'm thinking it might be circulation then. Things might have slowed down.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. I don't know if that's
I'm trying to think whether I'm just going to do a quick straw poll in the studio to see, and I don't want you to get upset or anything, but does anyone else get itchy when they get tired? This is awkward. I think it might just be you.
Oh, dear.
Do you get itchy when you get tired? Can you ask a little? You think you might? Right. Okay. Why do some people get itchy when they get tired? How does that work for you?
That's great. I mean, it may just be some people. That would also be interesting to know.
I like to have a scratch. I mean, this is a little bit intimate, but I do like to have a scratch of the morning. But I don't know if it's... I don't know if I'm particularly itchy.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That could be it. That could be part of it, though. You never know.
You're on. Yeah. I mean, it's usually when I realise it's time I cut my fingernails, but that's probably far too much information. David, many thanks indeed. 0345 606 0973. Is there a relationship between itchiness and fatigue? That would be the fancy way of putting the question. Or why do we get itchy when we're tired? We'll probably be more in tune with David's little boy. Lee is also in Birmingham. Lee, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Yes.
I often drive across the M62 because I drive a truck and I see a sign saying 1,222 foot above sea level.
Yes.
How do they work out sea level? Because the seabed's not level and the tide goes up and down.
Yeah, but they just take... Oh, man, I should know this. Just bear with me for a minute, will you?
I will.
There's an agreement on sea level, if you see what I mean. It's a man-made concept. And that is sea level. So the sea can be below sea level. There you go. That's part of the answer to your confusion, isn't it?
Not really.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Don't argue. Exactly, because you're saying, how can you have a sea level if the sea goes up and down? The sea can be below sea level. So sea level is of course it can, because it doesn't move according to where the sea is. Sea level is like a fixed thing.
Like, you see this sign, and it's 1,222 foot, precisely.
Yeah,
above sea. That's what got me. How can that be?
Because sea level is a thing. I'm trying to remember what thing it is. I'm getting to the point where I'm accepting it's not going to come to me in the course of bantering and delaying with you. But that is the first bit of the answer that you need to understand. To deal with your confusion is the idea that it moves, it doesn't move. So you could, the sea itself, you can go to the sea and the seaside, at the seaside, the sea will be below sea level.
Gotcha. I think I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, but some, you need a better answer, because we need to know what sea level is and how it was decided, don't we? And that then you'll be golden.
Yes, please.
Yep, you're on.
That would be awesome.
I shall do my best for you, Lee. What is sea level? 0345 606 0973. Xander is in Brookmans Park. Xander, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Right. What I want to know is, if you have your voice box removed... for an operation, for operational purposes.
Yeah.
What do they do with the voice box? Does it get put in a fridge or what?
Or a bin? What is it?
And then put back in.
Is there such a thing as a voice box? Is it not just a figure of speech? It's an anatomical phenomenon, is it? A voice box?
Well, the reason why I'm asking was that I have mine removed a few years ago for medical procedure because of sepsis. And they put a pipe down where the voice box would have been.
Right.
And that was my understanding that the voice box was removed so that to aid with my breathing.
Yeah.
But a friend asked me, well, what did they do with the voice box? And obviously I didn't have much of a clue. All I did know at the time, whenever I tried to speak, I have friends visiting me in hospital, I tried to speak, and all that came out was air.
Wow.
And no there was no sort of sound.
Are the vocal cords in the voice box?
Yes, yeah. So they were just removed somehow.
What did they put back, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, that's what I want to know. You know, that's why I'm asking, because I'm not medically qualified.
I hate to break it to you, Xander, but nor am I, mate. But but I don't understand how you've got your voice now if they took your voice box out.
Yeah, well, that's what, because I was just led to believe, because I had a tracheotomy.
Right.
They did a tracheotomy. When friends came to visit me, I tried to speak back to them. All that came out was just air.
And then as time passed, your voice just...
Because they put a pipe down my throat.
Yeah.
To aid me with breathing.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, a couple of days later, my voice was restored. So I was just under the impression they'd taken
And is your voice the same as it was before?
Yes.
Well, then they can't have taken your voice box out unless they put it back again.
That's what I want to know.
Where did they put it before they put it back? Is that the question?
Yes.
Oh, my God, yes, Craig, sorry. I thought you were meaning...
What did they do with it? Where did they put it? I mean, because I know...
I mean, you're putting a lot of faith in mystery.
I could not speak.
You're putting a lot of faith in mystery hour, Xander. No, I get it. I mean, that's why I asked about the vocal cords, because the sound is made when air passes over them, isn't it? That's how we make sounds and noises and speech and song. But you're putting a lot of faith in mystery hour on this. You could have just gone back to your doctor.
Oh, no, I've moved since. It was 15 years ago, James, and I thought, well, you know, you have experts listening in from all disciplines, don't you?
Yeah, this is what I mean. We do. We do. But, yeah, I mean, this is probably the most faith anyone's ever placed in mystery hour. Where did they put Xander's voice box? Can I ask what hospital it was, just in case the actual surgeon responsible is listening?
Sorry?
What hospital was it?
It was Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham.
There we go.
I was in altogether. I was in for 4 months at both Queen's Medical and City Hospital
Good
in Nottingham.
Grief. Well, you sound very well. You've made a full recovery, clearly.
Oh, well, sort of. I lost a few toes and a bit of stomach and a bit of a finger and part of my stomach.
God.
And one, two other bits and pieces, but no, I'm fine now. It's just the friend asked me,
"Where did your voice box? What did they do with your voice box?
Your voice box? If they took it out?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I've just had no idea."
Did you resist the urge to do the joke?
What joke was that?
To say to the doctor, "When you put my voice box back in, will I be able to sing opera?" And then he would say, "Yes, there's no reason at all why you wouldn't be able to sing opera." And you would say, "Well, that's good, because I couldn't sing it before." Boom, tish! Or yodel. I've got to get you. We've got to try and get Xander an answer for that. What a fantastic question. 16 minutes after 12. We've got an early leader for the Mystery Hour board game as well this week, I think. 16 minutes after 12 is the time. If you can answer that question, the sea level question, the itchy and tired question, or the raindrops don't keep falling on my head question, then you know what to do.
This is a new batch of comedians trying to impress the Taskmaster.
Very hard to pick who I think is going to be worse.
Doesn't sound like they're doing very well, though.
Next!
Find out who's up to the task as Bridget Christie, Sophie Duker, Judy Love, Ardal O'Hanlon and Chris Ramsey do battle in brand new Taskmaster. Thursdays at 9 on Channel 4 and stream free on All 4.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 19 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues with some absolutely cracking questions. If you can answer any of them, you know what to do. If you'd like to contribute your own inquiry, well, you also know what to do. Danny's in Rochester. Danny, question or answer?
Hello, James. Hello. I've got an answer for you.
Good
it's
man.
To do with the raindrop question.
Oh, splendid. Do they keep falling on my head, or can they make their way back up into the atmosphere?
They can't make their way back up. So you were almost right when you said about the heat. It's actually cold air. So as raindrops can begin to fall from a cloud, but if they pass through a layer of colder, drier air, they can evaporate before reaching the ground.
Ah.
This is more common during winter, because obviously the air tends to be colder during winter. But during the summer, it can happen in certain weather patterns as well.
So it starts full... So it's water, and then it hits cold air, and it evaporates. I'm being a bit thin.
Yes, so... Cold air tends to be drier, so there's less moisture in the air. And because there's less moisture in, so let's say there's a layer below the clouds,
yeah.
The rain drops fall out of the cloud, move into that colder, drier air. And because the air is drier, the raindrop just evaporates.
Is evaporate the right word?
Yes. So there's something called evaporative cooling.
That's what I need. This is the content I came for.
Process.
Yeah, okay. Because everyone else thinks of kettles and you think of steam and evaporation, so the water, but it's not doing that. It's being almost... there's a level of moisture in the air, and if you go below that level, then when water reaches that bit of air, it will suck the moisture into the air, and it will now just be slightly more moist air than it was before. Is that right?
During winter, you can see that when it'll start raining, and then after a few minutes, it turns to snow. That's because as the snowflakes melt higher up, it cools the air around it, and then that freezing level lowers. It's sort of a similar process.
Yeah, I love it. Qualifications?
I've been studying weather for 15 years, and I run a social media account dedicated to weather.
Fantastic. Remind us what it's called.
It's called Met Forecast.
There we go. That's a lovely answer. Oh, great stuff. We've got the qualifications. Round of applause for Danny.
Thank you.
And speaking of snowflakes, I forgot to do Woke Watch today. I didn't forget to do Woke Watch today. I just didn't have a good example. So we will return to that tomorrow, hopefully. But you need to keep sending in the thingamy, the examples, the contenders for Woke Watch. 22 after 12 is the time. Andy's in Tunbridge. Andy, question or answer?
Answer, James, sea level rise.
Yes.
Sea level and height above sea level. So, yeah, you were very close with your idea that it's obviously fixed to a certain location. So sea level was originally fixed to Liverpool, but now it's a couple of hundred years ago, the Ordnance Survey moved that location to a little town in Cornwall called Newlyn.
Oh, yeah.
So all of our heights now are measured what we call metres above Ordnance Datum Newlyn. Newlyn was chosen because I think it's got quite a small tidal range.
Right.
And also quite predictable tidal cycles. But you're quite right that the tide obviously does fall below sea level. So as you look at a tidal hydrograph, you'll see that some of those values will be below that value, but essentially the value that is chosen as zero is the kind of median, really, of that tidal cycle, generally.
Mm-hmm. As in the midpoint between high tide and low tide?
Kind of, yeah. But then, obviously, around the coast, you'll see that every other hydrograph is then kind of, obviously, has to mimic the baseline.
So it's calibrated to the baseline. Yeah. And it's the Ordnance Survey that are in charge of disseminating that information, as it were.
Yes. And then obviously all of their contour maps are all set to that value.
And is it international?
No, it's not.
So there could be different sea levels in different places in the world?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, because, you know, the tides and they're obviously translated all around the planet as the Earth sort of rotates on its axis.
Yeah.
But so each kind of mapping organisation will have their own fixed baseline according to you know, their own needs, really.
Good answer. Qualifications?
Cartography degree. That's and nice. Environment Agency now doing flood warning and all kinds of things around the kind of coastal forecast and things.
How many rounds of applause is that you've got now? Are you keeping count?
Four, I think.
That's pretty good, isn't it? This is the fourth or the fifth coming up?
This is the fourth, I think.
This is the fourth. There we go. Look at that. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you very much.
Lovely stuff. No, that was a nice answer as well. Lee will now be able to drive his truck over the M62 with a little bit more knowledge in his glove box than he had before. What was the raindrops one? What's the name of the fellow who answered the raindrops one? I've got to keep my notes so I can give away the free one. Danny, of course it was. It was Danny with the forecast. Elliot's in Solihull. Quite a West Midlands flavour to the programme today, Elliot. Question or answer?
It's a question, Joe.
Carry on.
Why do we refer to the recently deceased as the late?
Yeah, it's a good question. That I'm going to just burble for a bit in the hope that the answer comes to me, but I'm not massively optimistic.
If you'd like some context, James, it's because a friend of mine from Pamplona was at a wedding here recently.
Yes.
And you know, you've got guests at certain tables and they're sort of seated out like a seating plan.
Mm.
Across from him was a vacated seat for a late uncle, who I think, because the wedding was supposed to be during COVID, but it wasn't, and he passed away since, unfortunately.
Oh,
But he asked me why he said the late Uncle so-and-so.
Yeah.
Because he assumed it was because he was arriving later in proceedings. Well,
you just would, wouldn't you? He's coming. He wants to skip the speeches.
Exactly. But I couldn't explain it to him. But he asked me what it means, so I thought I'd ask you and the listener.
Because you say late of this parish, but that's not an answer to the question, is it? Because that's the same use of the word late in a context. It might just be a use of the word that we're not familiar with, because it only happens in those contexts. So it's like asking why does any word mean anything? But the
I feel like you only use it for recently deceased as well. You don't use it, for example, Oliver Cromwell. You don't call him the late Oliver Cromwell, do you?
I don't know if you'd be technically incorrect if you did, but I guess it's possibly for where there's any room for confusion about whether somebody is alive or dead. Although in this case, it's created more confusion with your Spanish friend.
June Brown was the only one, because obviously she passed away recently, so she's referred to quite a bit in
the late June Brown, the late and great June Brown. I like that. We'll get you an answer. I'm almost certain, but I'm a little bit embarrassed that I can't give it to you myself, because I think at some point that might have come up before. I think we might be with that question, and even with the sea level question, although Andy's already answered that, we might be erring or veering very close to the possibility of someone's qualifications for answering a question on this week's Mystery Hour being the fact that they've actually had it as a question in the Mystery Hour board game, which is just proof positive that when I tell you I've forgotten probably more questions and answers on Mystery Hour than I could ever remember, I am not yanking your chain. I'm pretty sure we've had that one before, but if I can't remember the answer, we're allowed to have it again. Ross is in Newcastle. Ross, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Hello.
So it's an answer to the tracheostomy question.
Yes.
So he was asking what happened to his voice box.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, so a tracheostomy doesn't actually have that much to do with the voice box, because everything happens below it.
Right.
So if your Adam's apple is obviously just under your chin there.
Yeah.
A tracheostomy goes in below that, and it's just a hole or a communication from the windpipe or trachea to the outside.
Yeah.
And that means that they can breathe through that hole, or if need be ventilated through that hole.
And that means that when Xander tried to talk, the reason only air came out was because no air was making its way past the tracheotomy hole.
Yeah.
So his voice box went nowhere. His voice box stayed exactly where it always is.
Exactly that. There are
Sherlock Holmes, I love that. The answer, once you've eliminated all the possibilities, like it being in a fridge, whatever you are left with, however unlikely it might seem, and now it doesn't actually seem that unlikely, but when he came on the radio, just presuming from the start, the premise of the question was that it had been put somewhere.
Yeah.
Of course, the answer is it hadn't been put anywhere. It had just been bypassed by the hole in his neck.
Of interest, there are tracheostomies you can get with holes that enable people to speak. They're called speaking valves. That means that it will let air in through the tracheostomy, but then it won't let air out through it. So the air going out will be forced to go up through your mouth and nose, and that enables people to speak. But that's for people who have them longer term.
Or permanently. And there's machines as well, isn't there, that you can hold it to your vocal cords and it will act as a...
So you can get... I haven't seen one of those personally. You do sometimes see people with laryngectomies who have little valves they have to press, and then air goes through a different hole. But again, it's about producing a vibrating column of air through your mouth and nose.
I'm going to be quite diplomatic about how much I share in this story. But I was on my way back from Ibiza quite early on in my courtship with Mrs. O'Brien, and I had taken an executive decision to stay in the club. We were supposed to go back to our hotel, have a few hours sleep, pick up our luggage, and then go to the airport. And I took an executive decision midway through proceedings that we would stay in the club until the last possible moment, get the taxi to the hotel, pick up our luggage, and then go back to the airport.
Sounds like a great idea.
It was. I've got no regrets. But I was feeling I was a little worse for wear by this point in proceedings. And my then fiancé expressed concern that I might not be allowed on the plane. And I put my sunglasses on, and I was, you know, looking after myself and trying to keep a low profile. The bloke in front of us in the queue for the plane back from Ibiza had a record box, you know, like a metal record box. Mm. And I couldn't quite believe my eyes. He had a permanent tracheostomy, and he stuck a cigarette in it.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I've never forgotten it.
I said to Mrs. O'Brien, I think they're going to let me on the plane.
I think their focus might be somewhere else. Yeah.
could you imagine? It was unbelievable. What are your qualifications? I think I could guess.
I'm an anaesthetist.
There we go. Round of applause for Ross. Great work.
Thank you.
Oh, happy days. Crikey. 12:30 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Amelia Cox has your headline.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Any tips for the horses?
It's going to be one hell of a race, that's for sure. Oh, sorry, mate. I've got Michael Owen on the line. Here, Michael.
Hello, Gaffer.
What do you fancy in the big race today?
Oh, I think the favourite will win it by a distance.
Nah, not in these conditions. I think the young filly will push him all the way. Your best bet is... Oh, sorry, lads, I've got to run. I'm teeing off in 20.
Whether you listen to Harry or Michael, make your best bet at BetVictor. Search online for latest offers. 18 plus, be gamble aware. Please gamble responsibly.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
I'm going to interrupt Mystery Hour briefly because we've spent quite a lot of time over the last 2 days naming and, I believe, shaming MPs who were, in my view, denying their patriotic duty, never mind their parliamentary duty, to police the Prime Minister. It's what Parliament is for. And the attempts by Boris Johnson to evade scrutiny, evade investigation, evade inquiry, evade the consequences of his actions are legion now. And I think, therefore, it's only right to recognise Tory MPs who are doing or who will do the right thing. And William Ragg MP has just delivered a speech which, as far as I can tell, is remarkable. I'm going to read you some of it by way of proof that the question we've been asking for the last 2 days about whether or not they would do the right thing and why they wouldn't do the right thing was probably the most urgent question that British politics has faced this year. It feels like a very, very long time ago when certain newspapers were trying to tell you that the real villain of the piece was Keir Starmer. Do you remember that? Keir Starmer, by giving voice to grieving families and explaining why Boris Johnson's attempts to, quote, move on, or Jacob Rees-Mogg shamefully describing their plight as fluff, were so despicable. You have to pinch yourself sometimes when you swim against the tide of the Mail and the Murdoch media, because they do get to define reality. As Goebbels said, you tell a lie enough times, it becomes the truth. But it feels like years ago, doesn't it, that people were trying to tell you that the real problem here was Keir Starmer in this piece. So here is William Ragg, a Conservative MP. He's just told the House, I cannot reconcile myself to the Prime Minister's continued leadership of our country and the Conservative Party. To see Allegra Stratton crying, feeling the full weight of responsibility and anger of a country, was deeply moving, and I felt immensely sorry for her. We have been working in a toxic atmosphere. The Parliamentary Party bears the scars of misjudgments of leadership. There can be few colleagues on this side of the House who are truly enjoying being members of Parliament at the moment. It is utterly depressing to be asked to defend the indefensible. Each time, part of us withers. That is the point that we've been making about what do they tell themselves when they go through those lobbies, when they turn up for those interviews. Each time, part of us withers. We must stop delegating and delaying our political judgment. We each only have our own limited and imperfect integrity. There it is. Right there, from the words of a Conservative MP, the entire reasoning behind the last 2 days of coverage on this programme of Boris Johnson's latest disgrace. And William Ragg concludes, we can't keep spending it on others who we cannot be sure will not let us down. Wow. 12:37 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. Chris is in Rye. Chris, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Chris.
I want to know if there are any good viruses. I want to know if there are viruses that, you know, make you feel better. And when you wake up in the morning, I'm really great here. And
why? What's
must
happened?
Have caught a good virus.
What's happened? Have you been feeling quite chipper in the morning?
No, but I just think if there's viruses that make you feel bad, it would make much more sense for a virus to make you feel good, because then you go down the pub, you mix with your mates, and the virus would just spread all over the place, wouldn't it? Rather than everyone staying at home in lockdown. You'd
but
be,
we,
you know,
if we, if there was a
virus,
surely, I mean, I love where you're coming from on this, but surely if there was a virus that made us feel good, we'd know about it, wouldn't we?
I don't know. Would we ever bother looking for it? It's just that if everyone feels okay and happy, you wouldn't think anything was wrong. I know there are some viruses called phages that infect bacteria, so they're probably a bit good for us.
They're biologically good, but I don't think they would affect your mood much.
I want to know if we get one, and maybe we've got it all the time, you know, maybe otherwise
some people have got it, some people haven't.
Bridges or something.
Yeah. No, I mean, so you catch a virus, Yeah. And it makes you feel better than you would do if you didn't have it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think the answer's no, but I hope it's yes, because if it is, we should have a plague party. We could all go around licking each other's faces, hoping that we contract it.
The thing is, you see, you may never know that you've got it, would you? You just feel good, and everyone will feel good, so...
Yeah? So you have days when you don't know quite why you're feeling so at one with the universe,
exactly,
don't you?
And you feel...
Could you possibly have caught something? Could you have caught a sort of happiness bug?
Sorry?
A happiness bug is what we're talking
exactly.
about.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question, Chris. Mm. I should try and find out. But I'll tell you what, if the answer is yes, I'll give you the money myself.
Okay.
Thank you, 1239. I suppose laughter, in a way, fits into that category, but not in a medical sense. Louise is in Nottingham. Louise, question or answer?
Hi, James. I have an answer.
Carry on.
So it's about the itchy skin at night.
Yeah.
So part of your... You suggested that because of the body temperature and the blood flow, that is one part of the answer.
Okay.
But also...
So it's a known thing, is it? Getting itchy when you're tired. It's not just David and his family down in Birmingham.
No, it's not. Yeah, no, they don't need to go to the doctor.
Thank goodness for that.
Unless you've got some weird rashes, then maybe pop down. But yeah, no. So because we don't hydrate in our sleep and we're not drinking water, every part of our body becomes naturally dehydrated.
Yes.
And obviously through sweating as well. And that can make the surface of the skin quite itchy. Then, like you mentioned, the body temperature and blood flow increases to keep us warm. And then the rise in temperature of our body makes us feel itchy as well. So it could all be linked into the dehydration thing, really. So, yeah.
I like it a lot. Qualifications?
I'm a veteran army medic.
Yeah, that'll do nicely. Round of applause for Louise. Look at that. Fantastic. So the voice box question was done rather brilliantly, wasn't it, by Ross. Louise has done the itchy and tired question from David. Andy did Lee's sea level question. Chris's viruses. Is there such a thing as a virus that makes you feel better than you would feel if you didn't have the virus? We like that. And the origin of the word late when referring to a dead person. Still in need of answers, but we've got room for some more questions. Marjorie's in Lowestoft. Marjorie, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
When we're born without teeth. Then we get our milk teeth, and when they fall out, they're replaced by our permanent teeth.
Yes.
Why don't we grow another tooth if we lose those?
Some people do, I think.
Oh.
But do you want to know... I'm surprised you don't know this, Marjorie. But all your teeth are in your head when you're born.
Yeah, but...
They're stacked up.
Possible?
They're stacked up. They don't grow. They're stacked up on top of each other.
Well, is it not possible? I mean, whales grow, replace their teeth. Can we not do it so that we replace our teeth?
Well, obviously not. Otherwise, we'd be doing it like it was going out of fashion, wouldn't we?
Well, you'd think so.
No, but we can't grow a tooth. We can't. It's all there in your skull. You see a skull sometimes. You can see all the teeth stacked up on top of each other.
So
that's the answer. I mean, you can't grow a tooth.
Well, it's sickening.
Well, let's not get carried away. There's worse things to worry about in the world. You should try losing your hair like I am. I'd rather grow hair than grow another tooth. I'm all right with my tooth. I can go to the dentist's.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've got false teeth and they're driving me potty.
Well, that's because they probably don't fit properly, is it?
I know.
Oh, do they click a bit?
I think millions of people are the same.
I've often thought that evolution missed a trick there, because we shouldn't even have teeth by now. We should just have, like, permanent plates or something to eat with, because people would die of a rotten tooth not that long ago, before antibiotics were invented. And even now, the pain you have when you have a toothache, it's amazing to me that evolution hasn't come up with a solution to teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
Never mind growing new. Maybe we could be at the vanguard of a new level of the species. Well, we're just waiting for someone to be born. The problem is there wouldn't be any reproductive advantage to growing your own teeth, Marjorie. You wouldn't be able to sire more children, which is, of course, the driving engine of evolution. If you could grow your own teeth, would you have more children than the people over there who couldn't grow their own teeth? Answer, probably not.
Oh, I don't know. I think I would.
I'm going to give you a round of applause for the question. But I'm afraid that's the best answer you're going to get. Thank you. I hope your teeth feel better soon. John is in Bristol. John, question or answer?
Hi, James.
Hello,
yeah,
John.
It's a question, mate.
Oh, excellent, John. We always look forward to your questions. What have we got?
Here we go, then. Why are the buttons and the opening on the front of my trousers called flies or fly buttons?
Yes. Well, you want to know why it's called the fly?
Why is it called the fly, or the buttons called fly buttons? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You'd think I thought I might know that. Just got no, got nothing. The flies. All right. You're on. I honestly thought I knew that. I'm just something to do with theatres. I've got in my head.
Yeah, I mean, the question was prompted.
Yeah.
From an experience that I had this morning in the closed apartment of Marks and Spencer's.
That sounds reasonable. It couldn't have been indecent if it happened in Marks and Spencer's.
No, it's not indecent. No, lady walked past me and said, "Here, mate, your flies are undone."
Did she really?
Yeah, and to cover my embarrassment, I said, "Don't worry, missus, dead men don't fall out windows."
Silly old sausage.
Sorry about that.
That's alright, you should have heard my opera joke earlier. I shall try and get you an answer to your ridiculous question, John. Which is only really, you're not even interested in the answer, it's just an excuse to do your kind of what kind of joke, your Jimmy Cricket tribute act, wasn't it?
Oh, my God,
I know it was. You don't even care about the answer. You just wanted to get your joke on the radio.
I got both your books. I got your board game. Of course I care about the answer.
All right, then. You're on. We'll try and find out for you.
And keep the laughter going.
You've got to, haven't you?
I'm not a half.
You've got to keep it going. Otherwise, what's the alternative? Coming up to 12:45 is the time. Why are flies called flies? Is there such a thing as a good virus? Why do we refer to recently deceased people as late? Done the voice box, done the sea level, done the itchy and tired, done the raindrops. Looking good this week. And I think Xander's still just edging ahead for the copy of the board game for the question about his own voice box, which was built, it turned out, on an entirely false premise. 12:45 is the time.
Every time you fill up at Esso, you have the chance to win the value of your fill back in Nectar Points. Just remember to scan your Nectar card for the chance to win. Available on fuel purchases at participating Esso sites for a limited period only. Terms and conditions apply. See esso.co.uk for details.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:48 is the time. Brexit hardman Steve Baker, even by the dismal standards of Brexit hardman Steve Baker, has just, plumbed a depth in the House of Commons that I think could only be fairly described as previously unplumbed. Ian Blackford has called Boris Johnson a liar in the House of Commons, and he hasn't been reprimanded by the Speaker. I think that's because you cannot have an inquiry into an investigation or a debate about an investigation into whether or not the Prime Minister has lied to the House of Commons without at least positing the premise of the investigation. I think something similar might have happened with Jeremy Hunt some years ago. But normally you're not allowed, obviously, to call MPs liars in the House of Commons, even if their pants are on fire, you're not allowed to call them liars. And Steve, Brexit hardman Steve Baker, has responded by referring to Ian Blackford as a brother in Christ and asked him, does he not believe in redemption? I mean, there's desperate, and there's Brexit hardman Steve Baker. My colleague Shivani Sharma has tweeted very, very sagaciously, "So it seems politicians can bring in religion, but religious leaders can't bring in politics." Talk about double standards. It was double standards day yesterday. We forgot to properly mark it. But there it is, Brexit hardman Steve Baker, surrounded by politicians who think the Archbishop of Canterbury should stay quiet about matters Christian, but weighing in, using Christianity as some sort of desperate fire escape down which Boris Johnson might be able to escape the wrath of politicians dedicated to telling the truth about him. What a strange day this has turned out to be. And what a remarkable humiliation it is for the newspapers that have spent days now trying to tell you that none of this mattered, none of it was important, it was all going away. And even one yesterday, the Daily Express yesterday, trying to claim that Keir Starmer was the real villain of the debate in the House of Commons on Tuesday. Strange times we live in. Mike's in Shefford in Bedfordshire. Mike, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question just to say, wow, what a heavy day. So
isn't it?
My question's a little bit light, but
good.
Hopefully it will provoke some responses good. From your...
Well, hurry up, or we won't have time.
Well, I just want to say, great program. I'm a retired hack, so you'll understand why.
Excellent.
I'm chatting, but my question is straightforward. It's about moles.
Oh, yes.
My wife Pat and I walk quite a lot.
Yeah.
And we walk over lots and lots of fields. And in those fields we see lots and lots of molehills.
Mm.
In fact, one of the places near us is called Molehill Meadow. Now those molehills are sometimes about a foot high. And my question is that all dug by one mole, one tiny little mole at night? Or are there teams of moles that do them?
Or are there giant moles? There's a third option. I don't know whether you worked on a tabloid, but that'd be the tale that we went with.
But it's one of those things, you know, we walk up and think, God, there's another molehill.
And it's called Molehill Meadow.
We call it Molehill
Meadow. Oh, you call it Molehill Meadow.
Yeah,
right, okay.
Because it's got so many molehills in there, but everywhere you go, I mean, it's not just in sleepy Bedfordshire that
I get it. So molehills, they're bound to be dug by more than one mole, aren't they? There'd be several moles.
I don't know.
We'll find out. How many moles does it take to make a molehill?
Yes.
I like
it. Or a mountain.
Don't make a mountain out of a molehill. We only want a molehill. When does a molehill become a mountain? I shall try and find out for you. I presume it's more than one, but of course you're right. I don't know. Maybe there's like a pioneer mole that goes out first and then all the other moles follow. They're more or less similar sizes, but you're right, occasionally one up. That might have more to do with the soil, the dryness and the moisture of this. Come on, we've only got 6 minutes. Someone get this one right. How many moles does it take to make a molehill? Is there such a thing as a pleasant virus? Why are the flies on on John's trousers called flies? Why do we refer to recently deceased people as late? That's all I've got on my list. I think we've done the rest. And Tom's in Totten. Tom, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question, please.
Carry on.
My question is, if you're on a flight and you have a medical emergency, what happens when you land with regard to the customs checks if you're immediately rushed off to hospital?
Well, you mean your luggage?
No, you yourself. You say if you need to be whisked straight off to hospital, how do they check your passport and that you are who you say you are?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I presume they don't bother, really. They just keep you under in some sort of custody when you get there or they have it. So someone is being rushed through customs on a stretcher directly to, or an ambulance perhaps collects them from airside. How do they get in and out of the country?
Yeah.
I mean, what is the, because it'd be quite a good way, you could fake it, couldn't you, and smuggle yourself in. It'd be quite a clever way of doing things, although Priti Patel would probably send you to Rwanda if you did that. I shall try and find it. We're a short time. How do you do it? What happens? There you go. You heard the question. So I need an answer to that. What happens if you are in the middle of a medical emergency when you land and they spirit you straight to hospital? How do they check your passport and your papers? How many moles does it take to make a molehill? Is it one mole or is it lots of moles? Why are the flies on the opening of a gentleman's trousers called flies? Are there any such things as benign virus? Viruses make you feel better than you would if you weren't infected. And why do we refer to recently deceased people as late? Yanni's in Battersea. Yanni, what have you got? Question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on, Yanni.
So it's on the virus question.
Oh, yes.
So as far as I'm aware, viruses don't try and make you feel good or bad. It's basically them taking over your cells and systems to reproduce and also your immune system then hitting them that makes you feel bad. So that's what fundamentally viruses do. So it's not as if they would be able to inject you with something that will tell you feel good.
No.
Now, an interesting point that your caller made about bacteriophages, that they do kill bacteria, but they also do contribute to something which is called lateral gene transfer, and it's actually been known to make bacteria more harmful in the past.
Right.
He was on the right line, so at least.
But it would still not be a benign virus, as it were, in terms of how it makes you feel.
They're bacteria viruses. Their host is a bacteria. It's not us. They just happen to cohabit us.
Qualifications?
I'm a PhD in molecular biology, James.
That'll do nicely. So you've already got your PhD. So it's actually Dr. Yanni.
It is, yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Yanni. Round of applause. Nicely done. Tracy's in Tunbridge Wells. Tracy, question or answer?
It's an answer, please.
Carry on.
It's about the fly.
Yes.
Well, it comes from... the fly is... It comes from a flagpole where you fly a flag.
What?
Then it's on a pole and the flag flies. So the zipper resembles the pole and the tag on the end that you use to pull it up and down is the flag. So that's where it gets his name. So it's like flying, if you see what I mean.
Really?
This is true. screw you.
What are your qualifications?
That's it.
What are your qualifications?
Well, I work in fashion, but I like all of these kind of little things that come about because of something else. I like this a lot, this kind of fashion-y thing.
I don't think you're right.
Yes, I am. I am 100% right.
I thought I was going to remember the answer while the question was being asked, and I've actually remembered it while you were answering it.
What is your answer, James?
It was like, after they got rid of cod pieces, they had little flaps of material covering your bits, and that was called a fly.
But it's still flapping like on a pole. Did you see what I mean?
I think you should stop talking about poles.
Sorry. It's true, James.
Hanging on to
it's
poles.
It's true.
It's called a fly. It's like a little flag.
A pole, even if it's a flap on something, it's still flying. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, it's flapping like a flag. All right, we'll share the round of applause then. Because you shouldn't have brought poles into it at all. It's got nothing to do with
like
poles.
A flag pole,
stop
James,
it!
Like a flag
stop
pole.
It! It's got nothing to do with poles. There's no pole involved. It's a flap over the.
No, James. It's just that it resembles. It reminds one of this. If you see what I mean,
yeah.
It's just an association.
A flap of cloth that goes over the.
Oh, you're saying the flap of cloth.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a zipper, James, with a little tag on the end that you use to pull up and down.
No, but it was called. It's not. It's called
but
a flap.
It was a piece of cloth on the end of something to close something. It comes from this flapping.
No,
this
the zipper is named after
Greece,
the zipper
James.
Is no. The zipper is a fly because the
no,
flap
the
of
cloth is not a fly.
The flap of cloth was called a fly, and they kept the name the same when it became a zipper.
I'm so exhausted, yes.
You're not the only one. I'm going to give you a round of applause.
Thank you, James.
Otherwise, you're never going to stop talking.
No, I won't. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye. Kevin's at Heathrow. Kevin, question or... Oh, Lord save
us. I've got an answer for you, sir.
Carry on.
A medical emergency, the pilot would put out a pan call, pan.
Yeah.
You would get priority for landing. On arrival at the airport, you'll be met by the border force and the police. And the police and the border force would check the documents of the person on the plane before they're removed.
Perfectly done. Qualifications?
Flight paramedic with medical and rescue at Heathrow Airport.
Oh, get in. Round of applause for Kevin. Matt's in Teddington. Matt, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Quickly, please. Thank you.
It's simply you touched on it. It used to be Old English for recently, but not anymore. So late of this parish or somebody who's left the parish.
Qualifications?
I'm a funeral arranger.
Flipping out. I could be giving out Ray Liotta's at the moment, but I'm going to squeeze them in instead. Round of applause for Matt. And finally, Ian is in King's Lynn. Question or answer, Ian?
Answer, James.
Quickly.
Molehills. One molehill is created by one mole. They have a territory which they dig tunnels to get worms, which they feed from, and they push up the soil from the tunnel.
One mole. So how many moles does it take a molehill? Answer one. Qualifications?
Pest control technician, have my own company doing pest control.
Round of applause for him. There we go. Beautifully done. Oh, dearie me, that was a good one. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 10. You may have already detected Sheila Fogarty's presence in the studio, but I can confirm.
The fly caller, just a moment, it was like that whole exchange was like a bad first date.
Yes, it was a bit.
Yeah.
It was a bit.
You know, I felt like the person at the next table thinking, oh my God, give it up now.
That one's like, I'm going, I'll tell you what, if it had been, I'd have gone to the gents and climbed out of the window.
I'd have joined you.
That's no offence to Tracy.
No, I mean the conversation generally. It was very funny. Thank you.